The deadly high school shooting in Parkland has people across the nation talking about how to make schools safer. What do Tampa Bay residents have to say about the issue? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. The Tampa Bay Association of Black Journalists recently hosted a town hall on school violence in response to the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. The event was held at the Seminole Heights Branch Library in Tampa. Dozens of community leaders and residents attended to talk about issues relating to school safety and gun control. Today on Florida Matters, we'll hear highlights from that town hall. First, we hear portions of the panel discussion, and then we'll hear some questions from the audience. Some of the panelists include Jeff Akins, superintendent of Hillsborough County Schools, former Congressman David Jolly, St. Petersburg Police Chief Anthony Holloway, and Pierre Alsent, a senior at Hillsborough High School. Moderator Laura Harris with ABC Action News starts the conversation.
I really want to talk to Pierre first, because all of us are on the outside looking in. What do you see when it comes to your school safety and how the people around you feel?
I'm actually housed at the prestigious Hillsborough High School right across the street. I feel safe at my school. The biggest thing on campus life at Hillsborough High School is the interaction between the police officers or the school resource officers. It's the relationship that you build. They actually care for the students. They want to see the students do well. They make those little interactions, and those go a long way. And I just transferred to Hillsborough, and just getting to know them made me more safe, and I felt more comfortable in my school. And the teachers do a great job at Hillsborough High School. I'm piping my school up, but I'm just saying, my school. I just feel safe, and they understand what it takes for a lot of our young kids, because our kids come from rough neighborhoods, and to come to school every day and have to, you know, worry about academics and focus on trying to get the best education that they can so that they can get out of their situations is, you know, the biggest thing for Hillsborough, you know, and trying to make sure that they don't have to worry about the outside world. When you get to Hillsborough, you're a Hillsborough student, you get to handle your business, and you get to graduate on time and get where you need to be.
And to your point, I think that's one of the things that most adults look at, that school is supposed to be a place where kids can go and learn and be safe. So to Pierre's point, Superintendent Akins, he was talking about the administration, teachers, how everybody is so engaged. Where do you think some of the breakdowns are happening in some schools, though?
It starts with knowing all of our kids and knowing exactly, you know, what their needs are. Those relationships ultimately will help every one of our students feel safe. We do know that at school sites where relationships aren't strong, that issues are going to arise ultimately. If you don't know your kids, if you don't know what their challenges are at home, you may not know what's going to be brought to school that next day, the issues that are going to be brought to school that next day. So it's so important for our teachers who have the strongest relationships with the students, because they see them every single day during the school, to kind of have a thumb on the pulse of what's happening, not just with that student, but hear what that student's talking about, what's happening out in the neighborhoods. I want to really praise Hillsborough High School, because they just initiated the Sandy Hook Promise Start with Hello program, you know, where that's a key program where they're looking for kids across their campus, and they're looking for the ones that seem to be kind of disconnected, quiet, and just as student to student, they're going up and just starting conversations with them, just making sure that no student on that campus feels like they are alone. And so that's why we have stressed the issue of relationship, and I was so proud that he said that, because we have been talking about it for the last 3 years, that's the key part to this whole business of education, is knowing the needs of every single student. So you made me proud, Pierre.
So we heard from the student level, then the superintendent level. So I would like to hear from former Representative Jolly, because you have to know your kids and you got to know the people who you're dealing with. But down in South Florida, it seemed like they kind of knew who they were dealing with. And unfortunately, nothing happened. So at the legislative level, What can be done to make sure that if kids like Pierre are doing their job, if the teachers are doing their job, if the administration is doing their job, the superintendent's doing his job, now what? We still want to be safe.
Right. I think at the end of the day, we need legislators to change our national firearm policies rather than arming science teachers with guns. And I think that's the answer. I would encourage you, as you think about what we're seeing in Tallahassee and in Washington, D.C., without giving you a strong opinion one way or another, I kind of talk about it in four main areas from the policy perspective. To what extent do background checks need to be improved? And that requires some conversations about how much is available to be seen in a background check. Should we be able to access mental health records? And I think we're at a point in society where we think, yes, that's probably a fair compromise of liberty, that if you're going to purchase a firearm through a regulated transaction, there should be access to your mental health records. Background checks is one area. Class of weapons is another. This debate over whether or not we ban assault weapons, semi-automatic weapons or not. I think we could all agree whether or not there's an outright ban, we should make them functionally obsolete for the layperson who doesn't know how to use them. Make assault weapons as difficult to get as it is to get a security clearance in this White House. That will take you at least a year to be able to pass that exam. The third policy area is we look at how we harden facilities, how we harden schools, how we harden national security events. And then the fourth is enforcement. What are we doing to enforcement? And this is where law enforcement can speak to whether or not they have the tools and resources necessary. Wherever you come down in those four areas, that is what they are confronting in Tallahassee and in Washington. And I would say as voters and as a public, we should encourage what has happened in Tallahassee. Those are advancements to say, let's raise the age from 18 to 21. Those are advancements to say a 3-day waiting period. Those are advancements to say hundreds of millions of dollars into mental health and into our schools. What we wrestle with is whether that's enough. And that's a hard place for us to be as voters, to be encouraging, but at the same time, for some to be disappointed.
Police Chief Holloway, right now what we're seeing is a lot of threats, social media threats, call-in threats. How is this working in your department? I mean, I can only imagine how nerve-wracking that must be. You're dealing with what's going on in the streets, but at the same time, there's an increased presence that you all have to have at schools now.
Since this incident has happened, we have to make sure when any threat comes in, we have to look at it very seriously. We just arrested a young lady where she put a threat into the bathroom. We found her parents helped her out. But when that threat went out, 42% of the children did not show up for school that day. So let's think about how those kids did not come. So anytime we see a threat, whether it's in bathrooms or whether it's on Facebook, we have to look into those threats. So it does tie up resources because we take every threat very seriously. And it's very tenseful situation, not only for the parents, but also for the students and the teachers. Because again, like I said, 42% of those kids did not go to school that day because they were afraid that something was going to happen. We've since this has gone out, we've arrested three kids alone in St. Pete. And we keep telling people, this is not a joke, this is not a game. So it's very hard for us right now.
In 2012, when 20 kids, just little 6 and 7-year-olds, were murdered in their elementary school, I thought that was gonna be the last one. How are we still having this conversation?
Look, I hate to inject a difficult conversation into this, but the answer is inaction. Legitimately, whatever side of the issue you're on, if you are as far right on guns or as far left on guns, we really have seen nothing in the past 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I hate to get into arguments over statistics because I promise you, particularly in politics, there's a statistic to back up whatever your argument is, if you're right or left. But let's start with the fact that we know the United States has easier access to firearms than just about anywhere else in the world, and we have the highest rate of firearm violence. Now, how we solve that is a matter of legitimate political debate, but it's one that has been ducked at least for the past 10 years. What do we do about mental health? We know one constant in this is always mental and emotional health. It always is if somebody engages in this. And so it's important we have adequate mental health accessibility for anybody in society. But what are we doing at the intersection of mental health and guns? Nothing. And so why is a complex question with complex answers, but one thing we cannot avoid, is the absolute inaction from government actors in the past decade.
I think the Congressman is totally correct. If you talk to the average hunter, he or she will tell you what an AR-15 is. If you are a hunter, I guarantee you, if you cannot kill that animal with two rounds, you shouldn't be a hunter. You don't need a 100-round clip or a 50-round clip magazine. Our youth are talking to us now. When are we going to listen to them and have some type of action to tell our representatives what we want? Again, it's a hard conversation, but it's time to sit down at the table as law enforcement, say, and have that conversation and make some decisions.
What I found among law enforcement professionals, particularly law enforcement leadership, look, many of them lean more conservative when it comes to Second Amendment issues, just by nature of being in the industry. But what I found is most law enforcement leadership has very strong opinions about how strictly we regulate assault weapons and about some of the failures of our current background checks. And I think there's an opportunity for either party to develop a greater dialogue with law enforcement and use that to begin to approach difficult public policies.
What you're saying is you're absolutely correct. Those are the things that we need to look at. I'm all about the Second Amendment. Everybody has a right to bear arms. But what type of arms are we talking about carrying?
This is Florida Matters, and we're listening to highlights from a recent town hall meeting on school violence. You just heard from some of the panelists, Jeff Akins, superintendent of Hillsborough County Schools, former Congressman David Jolly, St. Petersburg Police Chief Anthony Holloway, and Pierre Alsint, a senior at Hillsborough High School. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we'll be right back. I'm Robin Sessingham. This is Florida Matters. We're listening to excerpts from a recent town hall meeting hosted by the Tampa Bay Association of Black Journalists in response to the Parkland school shooting that killed 17 people. Now we'll hear more from panelists Jeff Akins, superintendent of Hillsborough County Schools, former Congressman David Jolly, and St. Petersburg Police Chief Anthony Holloway. Moderator Laura Harris with ABC Action News continues our discussion before inviting the audience to ask questions.
The question now becomes reality versus resources. And maybe this might be for you, Superintendent. Do we really have the kind of money to be able to put an SRO in every school or two SROs in every school? As we were watching this massacre unfold on television, we're watching the helicopters over this huge school, and one person was supposed to be protecting this huge school full of 3,000-4,000 kids. Do we have the kind of money to protect the kids? And two, can you really put a price on a kid's life? You know what I mean? Can we just find the money somewhere?
So let me give you a little history of the resources that have been allocated at the state level for issues around school resource officers. It comes through a categorical called Safe Schools Allocation. So prior to Columbine, the state of Florida allocated $50 million across the entire state for that particular purpose. After Columbine, they increased that amount to $75 million. What that does for Hillsborough County, it provides us $3.8 million, and we spend $16 million every year on security. So we are already spending five times the amount of money on security than what the state of Florida invests in those issues. So we see through some of this legislation that has come out that there looks to be an increase in that. We know that our SROs do an amazing job across this community, and I've already had conversations with Chief Dugan and Sheriff Cronister about the capacity that we have or we don't have, you know, in the community to be able to provide a resource officer for every single school. And that's a concern. I mean, Sheriff Cronister said, you know, that would mean about 130 more resource officers in your schools, and we have 400 vacancies at the Sheriff's Office right now that we're trying to fill. So there's going to be a challenge there, I think, when it comes to that capacity. Now, we have our own security. You know, one of the things that we recognize, and if you're a parent and you're coming to a school, one of the things that you look for first is how easily someone can get into the school. And I know one thing that would deter, and it may not take a full-blown law enforcement officer to do, is, but someone at that point of entry needs to be visible for every parent. There's going to be steps we're going to have to take in all of this. We're still kind of hearing all the budget side of it. But right now, we spend almost five times outside of the Safe Schools allocation for our resource officers in our district.
Just a personal experience I had, I walked up to a school one day. I went inside. It was a high school. And they said, can we have your driver's license? I was there to shoot a story. So I don't have it on me. I don't carry my driver's license. You know, I just had it in the news truck. And she said, well, I need it for you to be able to get into the school. And not that I think I'm that important, but I just didn't want to walk back to the car. And I said to her, I promise you can Google me. Like, I'm who I say I am. This is the I'm from Atlanta, so all of the schools are closed. But here in Florida, they're all open. So maybe to your point, if there were, just asking, an SRO that was standing or an officer that was standing outside, front door, okay, so I see it. Now perception is reality. The school is locked down. Because clearly these people aren't walking in the front door and giving their driver's license. They're walking somewhere and doing what they came there to do.
You're absolutely right. And when I talk to parents, especially the last few weeks, that's one of the things that they have said, and why I made my comments earlier, is we have the ability in all of our schools in Hillsborough County to secure the perimeters. But we also know traffic is going to come in and off that campus all day long. So when we do have gates open, we have to have a more of a single gate. It becomes very difficult at high schools when you have deliveries coming into the cafeteria in the back, and you have parents coming in the front, how you monitor those particular two access controls. So the single gate that has to be open is the one that takes you to the single entry point that you try to get in there. And most families will say, if I can see a presence, if I can feel a presence and I'm coming there, I at least know that somebody is going to be speaking before you even get into that door, at least have some sort of interaction with the individual that's trying to get into my child's school, as long as we have that perimeter secure.
We're gonna start the crowd questions now.
Okay. Natasha Goodling. I have a local business here, and I started a campaign to pay off overdue lunch balances for 20 of the Title I schools here. I actually visited 16 of the 20 schools, and I was appalled that I only had to show ID at 3. The schools let me in. I was walking around the campus lost because I don't have children. I don't know where the cafeteria is or anything. And those schools also have resource officers. So are we making certain that our schools are actually following that protocol? I'm glad it happened to you, but again, 13 schools, it didn't happen to me.
And I appreciate you bringing that up because that is part of the protocol. Here is the issue that I feel like as schools, we want to try to do everything we can for our community to make you feel like this is, because you're doing great things, by the way, Natasha, out there for our school, so thank you very much for doing that. And once our schools get familiar with our community and get familiar with the people that are in our community, sometimes that becomes like, you're one of us, you're doing things and you're part of our school. And at these times, we have to remember about that complacency. We have to kind of circle back, because I was a principal on 9/11. My world changed as a leader at a school on 9/11. Everything changed. And so we had to be more vigilant than ever before, even the people that we knew. You know, we had to say, you know, we just have to be very consistent with how we implement our protocols at our schools. And so those are the kind of things that we're asking all of our administrators to do. But you probably come in and you see the secretary that you probably see before. You know them. But had you been walking into that same door and we have someone of security, someone posted there, that helps the people who really have the jobs of being a secretary and answering the phones and doing all the other things that they're multitasking every day to do, to take that burden off of them, because they really truly are right now the front lines in many of our particular schools.
I'm a grandmother, and I walk my grandson to school in the mornings, and he goes to Mitchell Elementary. The teachers are all out there every single morning. They're at all the doors. They have their walkie-talkies. One AR-15 can end all that. The teacher standing on the corner will be blown away in a second. They can kill 50 kids in 5 minutes. So the elephant in the room is not putting an SRO, who really, I'm glad they're there, but I don't want to feel good. I don't want those AR-15s out there.
Well, you bring up a great point because Sandy Hook was a perfect example. So Sandy Hook had all of the buzzers, it had all of the preventative measures, and still the perpetrator was able to shoot right through the buzzer, right through the gate, and go right into the school. The common thread, the wrong people have the wrong weapons. That's the common thread with all of these tragedies. And we can put all of the safety measures in place. But the AR-15, you're absolutely right. Any of those things that I just mentioned, from the SRO to the fencing to the buzzers, that won't have an effect. And so we have to go back to the root issue. Know who are the people out there that potentially you might be concerned about. And think of that person now with the wrong weapon in their hands. So we've got to make sure that we have the mental health service, not just the mental health services, the coordinated mental health services across our community with the dollars to fund that. And then we have to make sure the wrong weapons stayed out of the people's hands that absolutely have no business having them in their hands.
Former Representative Jolly.
There's no denying the influence of the National Rifle Association and the gun lobby. I think they have been wrong strategically for over 20 years. They could have taken the path of being an organization that truly fought for responsible gun laws, that embraced a waiting period and stronger background checks, higher regulations on assault weapons. Instead, they embarked on this absolutism of the last 20 years that has gotten us to where we are. But think about the NRA in two different respects. The first is the significant influence of the money, of the donor base of the NRA that resides largely in Washington, D.C. or just outside of Washington, D.C. That is undue influence that we should be angry about. But there is a part of the NRA that is the mobilized voter base. All right, I say this as somebody who served in Congress and represented constituents who felt very strongly about protecting the Second Amendment, who felt very strongly about their right to own a semi-automatic weapon. In our republic, in our democracy, those voices must be listened to, right? Every voice must be listened to. And that's the natural struggle within a democracy. Where it has been perverted is the donor influence. The reality is you have some races where they're putting in $3 million. And the people we should really hold accountable are the legislators who are allowing themselves to be influenced by that $3 million.
So in Hillsborough County, are we planning to allow our teachers to be armed in the classroom? And Chief Holloway, if you could, I know your police department, but if you could speak to Pinellas County?
That is not happening. I mean, here, that's not the solution. You heard from our students. I've heard from students saying, I don't feel safe. I wouldn't feel safe if my teachers had guns. I hear from teachers saying, I don't want to have guns. I hear from parents, I won't send my child to school if my teachers have guns. Who are our customers? Our kids and our parents. And so we have to remember to listen to them very, very clearly. We know that even though they took teachers out of the 7026 bill, they still left in other personnel at school. So I know that Sheriff Chronister, he's already on record saying that he does not believe that's the answer, you know, either. And we know our sheriff, based off the law that is being written, they're ultimately the ones that in our communities that will be submitting any kind of plans, you know, on that. But in Hillsborough County, we've been talking loud and clear about our thoughts.
I do not want teachers armed in the schools. You don't want me teaching, and I don't want teachers armed. And the reason why I say that is what we talked about. St. Pete Police Department, there's 562 sworn officers. We have a policy that we have to abide by. I cannot identify all 562 officers. Police officers talk about it all the time, blue on blue. That's why we put on our raid jacket and things, so we can identify those officers that are not in uniform. So when things go wrong, and I'm looking for who's with a gun, I need to know who that bad person is and who that good person is. And we have some good teachers out there. When we come into a school, I see a person with a weapon, that's a bad person. So unless we're going to come with a policy that teacher's going to wear some type of vest or somewhere we're going to be able to identify that person, we're putting a lot of people at risk.
Hi, I am a student at Lomax, and I was wondering what students can do to make our schools safer.
First of all, the students know more about what's happening around the school sometimes than the adults do, right? You're very, very, you know, you have all those conversations. Our young students, they're all out there on social media, and they're hearing what other kids are saying, what's happening out in their community. And so that's something that you can do. If you hear something or you see something, tell an adult right away.
Hi, my name's Kayla Dixon. I'm 17. My biggest concern and question, especially I'm going to be a voting constituent, Parkland was right there. That's something that could happen. I'm on a closed campus. I go to Countryside High School in Pinellas. I was provided a school ID freshman year. I don't even know where it is. We're not supposed to use it. I feel like if we implement mandatory school IDs on students, like you do on college campuses, and you swipe to get into your school, I am a current student here. An AR-15 isn't going to change that. I can't do anything about that, but at least they know I'm here. I'm supposed to be here. I can be identified. My question is, how do you implement that?
You know what, the strategy or the technique you just used, believe it or not, I've heard from more students that I've talked to, and even teachers. And I think, you know, as we talk about other technologies, other things that we feel like we could use, that definitely does help us better know who's on campus. I do believe there will be some dollars, you know, in the current budget that we will have to think about those types of situations. You know, we have the ability to have IDs for all of our kids, you know, and all we have to do is we just have to activate the technology to be able to use that every single day on our campus. So I think it's very doable.
How do we as citizens get things on the ballot to have an equal playing field? Because you can have good candidates, but if they can't compete against the big guys with the dollars, these campaigns, that means nothing. It means nothing. So how do citizens be able to get something on the amendment to get maybe some of these old guys who've been there forever just making all the money, the lobbyists, and make the playing field ever so a regular guy can be able to run a campaign and be able to compete?
The first part of that answer is going to be very boring, so I'm going to make it short. The system's rigged. System's rigged across the board. And we've got to unrig the system, and frankly, the way we unrig it is we fix the gerrymandering issue, we open primaries so everybody gets to vote, and we have comprehensive campaign finance reform. Now, here's what I will tell you, and this is where citizens have the power, and I think for a lot of people in the room, you're going to be interested in this. I am aware of several efforts at the citizen level backed by high finance donors that would otherwise be giving their money to candidates who are putting their money behind organizing an assault weapon ban in the state of Florida as a ballot initiative, likely in 2020. It's too late for 2018. Wherever you are on that issue, that is an opportunity. Just as we saw gerrymandering impacted by Fair Districts, which was a voter-led initiative where voters took control and said, we want lines to be drawn differently, I think you're going to see a voter-led assault weapon ban initiative in the state of Florida begin to mobilize later this year to be on the ballot in 2020. You will always see those challenged. But the optimism, the silver lining, if there is one, is that voters can lead initiatives that can be successful. This may be the time. The voices of the younger generation have already changed policy in Tallahassee. Maybe they change a ballot initiative in 2020.
That's it for today's show, but you can hear more on the podcast, including a Tampa entrepreneur who's developed an app for keeping kids safe that's now used in 27 states. Search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. And you can share your thoughts about school violence and other Florida Matters topics by leaving us a message on WUSF.org. There's a green button that says Start Recording. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. The engineer is Craig George. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.